You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, one and all, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards, in studio tonight, joined, as always, by my comrade-in-arms, Keith Alexander the Great. Folks, I came in here on two wheels tonight, this Saturday evening, May 31st. I got here literally 60 seconds. I cut it down to the minute before the show started. My daughter, who turned 4 years old in March, had her first ballet recital today. And it was a three-hour affair, an extravaganza indeed, and I got here, I cut it to the core. I stayed till the bitter end. She did great. The star of the show, a chip off the old block. Couldn't shortchange her, but I nearly shortchanged the rest of us. But I got here 60 seconds before the show, and now we're ready to rock and roll, and we're going to have a big show tonight. The two main topics we're going to be discussing are the incredible electoral victory sustained by nationalist parties in Europe this week, from Great Britain to Turkey, from Finland down to Greece, spanning the width and length of Europe. So-called right-wing parties have begun to take power, and this is good news, obviously, and frankly, perhaps the best I've ever seen in my 10 years of covering news for our people on this radio program. So we're going to be talking about that later on in the program. Also, we'll address the murderous rampage in Santa Barbara and much, much more during tonight's episode. Our featured guest later in the show this evening will be Brad Griffin, the editor of Occidental Dissent. He's going to be on with us to talk about the League of the South's billboard controversy, freedom of speech, and things like that. Really looking forward to having Brad on. He, like us, represents a philosophy that is pro-South. And so we're going to be excited to welcome him for the first time tonight. Keith, we met for our pre-show dinner planning session, or lunch meeting, rather, it was, a couple of days ago. And I said if there was any way we could have put that discussion in the can and ran it as our program this evening, we'd be hard-pressed to do better. We talked about a few of these things, some of which I just mentioned that we wanted to bring to the audience's attention this evening. I don't know if we can possibly duplicate or better the performance we had at lunch together, but what would you say about that?
Well, skidding in on two wheels isn't the way to do it, but that's the way life goes, unfortunately, so we're going to do the best we can. So Isabel is a chip off the old block. I never knew that you were a ballerino. As a female ballet dancer is a ballerina, and a male is a ballerino, I learned at the latest performance of the Nutcracker Suite back last Christmas. So somehow I have a hard time imagining James as a ballerino.
No. I never took the stage in that form or fashion as a ballerino or ballerina, but she was a chip off the old block in terms of being the center of attention, I guess you could say, and the love and adulation of her audience as she had this afternoon. Okay, it's getting laid on a little too thick here, but no, she did a great job. I'm very proud. One story here that I have to bring up, Keith, as we're having a little moment of levity here to begin the show before we get down into the meat of the business, in the heart of the matter, a woman in France married a bridge this week.
Australian woman.
She's an Australian woman, but she married a bridge in France. Okay, so that's exactly what it was. And she even got it ordained or received the mayor of the town's blessing, the mayor where this bridge of the town where this bridge stands. Here's the story from the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom. An Australian woman has taken her desire for the strong and silent type to a new extreme when she married a bridge. Jody Rose married the Le Pont du Diable Bridge in southern France after falling head over heels for the sensual 14th century stone structure. Mrs. Rose, or now as she is, Mrs. Le Pont du Diable, has spent the last decade traveling the world and recording vibrations in bridge cables with contact microphones and using them to create experimental music. After visiting dozens of bridges all over the world for her singing bridge music project, she decided this was the one. Although her new husband may struggle to express his feelings, newlywed Jody said his being is very present, and I feel at peace in his strong embrace. And as you can see here, I have it pulled up in the radio studio here, folks. This woman is in a wedding gown, and she actually has a brass ring. It's the size of a hula hoop that she gave to the bridge. She said that the bridge makes, and she referred to it as a he, makes me feel connected to the earth and draws me to rest from my endless nomadic wanderings. He is fixed, stable, rooted to the ground. He keeps me safe and brings me back to the ground myself, and then lets me go again to follow my own path. You can see her here. The ring is now on the bridge. Oh, well, it's not as offensive as homosexual marriage, but no less absurd, I guess you could say. And I was going to get into something I don't think I should share on a family program about this bridge, you know, being rock solid, I guess you could say. But anyway, she said that the bridge is everything she could desire in a husband: sturdy, trustworthy, sensual, kind, and handsome. The union received the blessing of the mayor, as I mentioned, in the town where this bridge has been built. Anyway, so Keith, what can you say?
For once, I'm speechless. I cannot believe, you know, is there any coupling too absurd that liberals won't embrace it? Somehow, now you have a woman marrying an inanimate object, a bridge of all things. The strong, silent type, as I said. I'm utterly speechless. I cannot imagine anything more absurd than this, but I'm sure that we'll be treated to it sometime in the next 6 months by the forces of liberalism worldwide.
We're going to have it up on the website, folks, for you next week, thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're going to have pictures. Yes, this story is absurd. It's silly. But again, as I say, I'm telling you, it is no less absurd or ridiculous than homosexual marriage, and no less illegitimate.
You know, the truth is stranger than fiction, and, you know, there is no coupling too absurd that liberalism won't embrace it and insists that the rest of us take it seriously.
Well, again, folks, all that being said, you know, we like to start things off on the lighter side, and I don't guess you could get much more than that, but a lot of serious things coming up in the show tonight. We want you to buckle up, hold on tight. 3 hours of the political cesspool coming your way. And again, as we mentioned, two of the biggest topics we're going to be addressing this evening in depth: the rise of the right in Europe and all across Europe, as well as the Santa Barbara rampage that was motivated by a man's hatred of blonde women, and much, much more. Brad Griffin, our guest tonight, we're going to be talking about the League of the South. And Keith actually has a couple of things here that we're going to be getting to right after the break. Keith, we only have seconds until the music starts. Why don't you give us a 5-second snippet preview?
Well, the Memphis Symphony Orchestra, like many big city symphony orchestras throughout the nation, is teetering on the abyss. It's about to go under. It's had to cut the pay of its musicians by a healthy percentage, like 50% or whatnot. But we're going to explore something that they are doing right now, which might give you an insight into why they are struggling financially. With that teaser, we're going to turn you over to our sponsors, and hopefully we'll be prepared to explore this in depth.
Right after this.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
many of you have heard me talk about my vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this vigor stuff about? Well, vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called vigor. Would you like to improve your vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free vigor score test today.
We fought. We learned. We struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, before we get to the focal points of tonight's show, which I mentioned in the first segment, we're going to make a brief departure and cover a couple of items that Keith has brought in. This from the Daily Fish Wrap here in Memphis, the Commercial Appeal. Sunday, May 18th edition. Article headline, Symphony performs music tuned to a tragedy's aftermath. A while back, Mian's circle of friends realized that they had an opportunity. The philanthropic group formed to support Memphis Symphony Orchestra music director Mian Chin and her community outreach efforts saw the possibilities of using music to confront the crippling and ongoing issue of racism. You just can't beat it, folks. No matter what happens, racism is more prevalent today than it's ever been.
It's always
number one on the hit parade. The article continues. By commissioning a symphonic composition, they hope to step up the discussion in the community by having the work titled Rebirth of the Dream directly connect to the aftermath of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Esquire. The piece composed by Paul Brantley premiered Friday night at the Cannon Center for the Performing Arts, which, by the way, was where my daughter performed today. The MSO, led by Maestro Chin, performed it along with several other works in a concert that was devoted to works of faith, struggle, and freedom. And, of course, the only time you can talk about matters of faith, struggle, or freedom is if it's their faith, struggle, or freedom. You can't talk about, you know, Christianity, our faith, our struggles, our freedom. It's not our country anymore, by the way. It's theirs. It would be churlish to take the work too much to task for being less than a masterpiece, however. It works just fine in the role for which it was intended, which is to instill more white guilt. That's my editorializing there. To stimulate an ongoing discussion about how society deals with its horrors, whether natural or created by the worst of humanity. That would be, I presume, me and you, Keith. Anyway, why are we talking about this of all the things we could be talking about tonight?
Well, this coincides with the fact that the Memphis Symphony Orchestra is on thin ice financially. They are just about to go under, just like the symphony in Camden, New Jersey, and in various other large cities, Detroit, Michigan, come to mind as places where there is no longer a symphony orchestra. And one of the reasons that they just don't seem to make the connection is that they don't play the classics. They don't play Tchaikovsky, Beethoven, Mozart, Haydn, Vivaldi, and all of these people that that have been part of the repertoire of symphony orchestras throughout, pre-modern times, basically, until today, from the Enlightenment on. They won't go back to the things that people that actually attend the symphony and pay for their tickets. Now, let's make that important distinction. They had plenty of people attend this performance they were talking about, but what they didn't tell you is that almost all of those people who, are from the urban underclass got in free. You don't support the symphony just by putting your body in the seat. You have to buy a ticket because, lo and behold, these musicians and the director expect to get paid. So who's going to do that? Well, it's either going to be Daddy Warbucks or it's going to be paying customers. And Daddy Warbucks's for these type of things become fewer and further between in the modern world. So consequently, rather than playing the classics that will draw paying customers to put their fannies in the seats of the symphony in Memphis, they play twaddle like this, and they even admit that it's twaddle. Listen to this. It said it would be churlish to point out that it's less than a masterpiece. Well, of course it's not. It is a bit of flapdoodle, actually, I'm sure. But, even the sympathetic reporter, John Sparks, who wrote this, admits that it's no good. But it'd be churlish to point that out because it's so well-intentioned. It's so politically correct, in other words, James. Political correctness has come to replace discriminating taste and good music as the touchstone for what a good symphony orchestra is supposed to play now. You play politically correct vignettes or pieces like this, and you neglect Mozart, Beethoven, and Tchaikovsky and Brahms, I guess. So, it's a wild, crazy world we live in, and the people at the Memphis Symphony Orchestra are still scratching their heads, wondering why they're going broke.
Well, I can answer for them very quickly and very effectively, and it's as plain as the nose on your face. As the demographics of downtown Memphis, where this venue is located, continue to change and become more and more black. I think the inner city of Memphis is now 60-something percent, almost 70% black. And as that continues to occur, you're going to have less people going to the symphony. And why is that? That's because blacks don't like classical music. They don't like symphonic arrangements. They've never cared for it, and they never will. And that's okay. Different people like different kinds of things, to each their own. Blacks like a heavy bass and a drum beat, and they're not going to go to a symphony. I guarantee you can go to any symphony house and watch any orchestra across America, and 95%, and I'm being generous, lowballing the estimate, 95% of the attendees at that performance are going to be white. White people gravitate to that. It's classical. It's European. Blacks don't want it, and they're not going to go to it. And whites aren't going to go downtown because they don't want to get mugged. And if they want to go to a symphony, they're not going to want to go see some nonsense about that make them feel bad. Tell them how evil they are, which is what this piece would most certainly do. So that's why nobody's going to it, and that's why people in Memphis generally don't go to the symphony.
Or it might be just that it is an inferior piece of music, which the reporter more or less admits. Why would you go to hear a symphony orchestra perform an inferior piece of music? The whole purpose of having a symphony orchestra is so that you can do justice to great music like that of Beethoven, Mozart, Tchaikovsky, Brahms, Dvorak, Haydn, Vivaldi, Handel, you name it. But we're not going to play those composers anymore because that's not politically correct. Apparently, political correctness is going to pull all of Western civilization into the abyss, including symphonic music.
Well, Keith, and of course, it's not just the symphony and the theater arts and the performing arts that are going down. Certainly the movie industry, and we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about this because this is another obvious observation, but the movie industry has waned and become become more contemptible, much more contemptible over the years since, say, 1954 when Tammy came out. That was a movie you were talking to me about at this lunch we had. I know we only have seconds again before the break, but tell us what you liked about Tammy and why you'll never see a message like that with characters like that in a modern film again, so long as you know who runs Hollywood.
Right. Well, it was Tammy and the Bachelor, and it was a 1957 movie. It was kind of like the golden age of Hollywood's last gasp. Tammy is about a southern rural girl who is not highly educated but has a kind of homespun wisdom that charms everyone. It's set in the South, specifically in Mississippi, of all places, that worst place on the planet Earth, Mississippi, and it revolves around the Natchez pilgrimage and the Rebel Ball. Can you imagine Hollywood featuring anything like that as the theme of a feature movie? But it was such a success. I remember it because I was born in the 50s. An entire generation of white Southern boys was named Shane, and an entire generation of Southern girls were named Tammy after those two movies, Shane and Tammy and the Bachelor, starring Debbie Reynolds. They made it basically a Tammy franchise after this. Tammy and the Doctor, Tammy, Tell Me True and Whatnot, starring Sandra Dee, but she doesn't hold a candle to Debbie Reynolds. I would recommend everybody find on Netflix or otherwise Tammy and the Bachelor and watch it if you have young girls in your family. We'll talk more about this after these words from our sponsor.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people
and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks. Tragedy struck the community of Isla Vista, I believe it's called, near Santa Barbara, California, this week. About 20 miles, by the way, from where Sam Bushman, the owner of our radio network, grew up, if you can believe it. Now he, of course, lives in Utah, where our network is based. We're here in Memphis at the flagship radio station for the Political Cesspool tonight. We're all over the place. I mean, what can I say? Around the world, global. It's a phenomenon. But in Santa Barbara this week, you had this presumably half white, definitely half Chinese young man. He was, I think, 22 years old. He killed or intended to kill as many blonde women as he could. That was the intended target of his rage, because he wanted to date blonde women. He wanted to have an active sex life like most college guys do. But alas, they didn't find him desirable. His father was a big shot in Hollywood, an assistant director of the Hunger Games franchise, which is one of the most successful entities at the box office in the last few years. But what I saw from this that struck me the most was that the media in general, the establishment media, and the Southern Poverty Law Center, no surprise there, referred to this guy as, one, a misogynist, and two, a racist. And white. So they pulled a Zimmerman on him, first of all. You know, Zimmerman was about as white as Barack Obama. Zimmerman was truly a cornucopia, a little bit Jewish, I believe, certainly Hispanic, white somewhat, but not white as they portrayed him to be. They portrayed him to be like a member of the Aryan Nations or something. But so they pulled a Zimmerman on Elliot Rodger and categorizing him as white, which was, you know, who are you going to believe, the media or your lying eyes? I mean, you look at this guy, or if you prefer, as the lyric, and I heard it to the grapevine, is sung, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear from the mainstream media. This guy, maybe a little white in him, obviously, but not white as you would consider a white to be. Racist, yes, in terms of the fact that he targeted blonde women. I would say that's racist, to white women. Of course, to be blonde, a blonde woman, you'd have to be white. But anyway, no, all that completely out the door. No, he was a white racist. He was a white racist. Okay, we got to see.
Back here, some technical difficulties, but we're back. And so they're claiming that this guy, long story short, is a white racist, motivated by racial hatred. Number one, he's not white. The victims that he chose were, but that doesn't factor into the media, not one iota. They're going to write their script. The most ridiculous passage I found was from the Daily Coast. They wrote this, and I'm going to turn it over to Keith for commentary. When an Arab or Muslim American kills people en masse, they're a terrorist. When a black person shoots someone, they're thugs. When a white man, referring to this guy as if he were white, commits a mass shooting, he is just mentally ill or sick. Whiteness and white privilege, they're saying that this guy is, again, white and the beneficiary of white privilege, are the luxury to an individual, one whose behavior reflects nothing about white people as a group. There will not be a national discussion about the culture of white privilege or how white Americans have a cultural problem with their young men and gun violence. And that was another thing. The gun killed those people, not this guy that has cropped up in reports of this story. The news media will not devote extensive time to the social problem of white male violence and mass shooting. Elliot Rodger, a white, rich, entitled young man, so on and so forth. Keith, I don't even know where to go when you begin to... when you begin to break down the inaccuracies of this report, but that's what passes for mainstream coverage, or establishment coverage, rather. We're a mainstream media entity here on AM radio, but that's what passes for establishment coverage of this heinous shooting.
Well, I'd like to give the reply to the Daily Kos. That's KOS, by the way. They're a notorious left-wing outfit. First of all, when a white person or somebody who is a reasonable facsimile thereof commits a serial murder or a multiple murder crime, he is much worse than a thug, much worse than a terrorist. Those would be tame words to describe what a person that passes for white is if they commit that. He is a racist. That's the worst thing you can be in politically correct Western civilization today, in Europe or in the United States or in Australia or in New Zealand or wherever, okay? Never mind the fact that his victims were all white women and he is a supposedly white man, he would be a racist, okay? That's the worst thing that you could say about anyone. You know, it would be better to say that he was a pedophile, or that he was a person that has sex with dead bodies. You know, that would be a step up for this person in the lexicon of political correctness today. Now, again, gun violence. This man, first of all, he doesn't fit the stereotype they're trying to pigeonhole him in. He is a liberal. He is a blue state American. He is not some red state conservative person who is the type of person they're really targeting. They can't find those people committing these type of crimes, at least very often. It's like finding a diamond in one of these, you know, fields where they let the public come in and roam around, trying to find a 20-carat diamond under those circumstances, trying to find a white, conservative, red state American who is supposedly the fountain of all evil in the world today. They don't commit these crimes. This guy is a half-Asian, half-white, liberal from Hollywood or those environs around there, whose father is a multimillionaire movie producer who is one of the prime movers in that most profitable franchises today, The Hunger Games, which again is a masterpiece of, you know, liberal, I guess you would call it, depravity. That's about the best description I can give. It certainly is no Tammy and the Bachelor, that's for sure. So this is going to be that somebody, they're always trying to put new wine into old wineskins. They're trying to put people who are not white red state conservatives into the mold of being white red state conservatives. And then once they have the person mislabeled, then they start teeing off on him now at the Daily Kos. It's nothing but a total fabrication. Why does anybody take the establishment mainstream media seriously? I have no clue.
Well, Keith, and you know, with that being said, this article, which was not unlike many articles that you've read about this story from ABC, CBS, NBC, et cetera, talking about Elliot Rodger being white and a racist, despite the fact that he's not white and his victims were, that doesn't even factor in that the media could be so dishonest. I mean, that's even, we know that they're going to lie to us, but that's just beyond anything you could possibly expect. Do they not think people have eyes that can see what this guy looks like? But nevertheless, they talk about the white culture of gun violence and, you know, the mass murderers being white. I would love to get on a television show. You know, I've had a lot some experience with CNN, being with them several times in the past. I'd love to get on there and compare white violence in crime statistics, gun crimes, versus that of the black community. I mean, it's, you know, that is just preposterous to pretend that whites commit. Now, whites are, again, still nearly 70% of the country, falling fast. But so, yes, they do commit more crimes, more total crimes. But when it comes to percentage based upon their standing in the population, percentage of the population, it's not even close. And when it comes to real violent crime, sex crime, rape, even though blacks are only 15% of the population, they out-rape whites. Not that it's a contest, but just, you know, I don't know how else to explain it, by a ratio of, what, 30,000 to 1, something like that? It's absurd. Well, anyway, that's what passes for interracial rape. We got to take a break, folks. We'll be right back.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1200mm coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. James Edwards, Keith Alexander at Full Strength. You know, we're a nationally syndicated show, always in the top 10 in terms of online listenership during our weekly time slot. Adding new AM/FM affiliates by the quarter, at least. I know we have a couple of new ones that have come online here in recent weeks. But every now and then, we are still plagued by technical gremlins, and I think we had a little momentary lapse in that last segment, but nothing we couldn't troubleshoot and overcome, and we're back to full strength now. It just goes to show, I think, frankly, we like to do that from time to time. We like for things to mess up, just to tell you and to prove to you that we are live, baby. Hey, no taped stuff here. We are live. It doesn't matter. Yeah, and how much we need your money. That's right. We just goes to show how much you need to support our second quarter fundraising drive, which, by the way, kicks off this coming week. We'll have some great incentives for you, for those who give. But no, it does go to show that we are live, and no matter what's going on in our lives, you know, a week ago I found out I was having a boy. Well, my wife is having the boy, but I had something to do with that. Left and came down to the radio station to punch the clock. Today, make it here a minute before the show starts. I was at my daughter's ballet. No matter what's going on in our lives, we're always here with you. We stay lit for you, and we will overcome any obstacle for you, technical or otherwise. And with that being said, welcome back to the show. We were, of course, talking about the – we'll even deal with gender benders, which that's a little inside thing on a piece of equipment we have here called a gender changer, and we believe that we're it's where our problem comes from. It's always causing a problem. Anyway, we were talking before the break about – the shootings in California. The first big observation I made, of course, was that they're trying to cast the shooter as white, and that it's white gun violence that's always the problem here in America, one of our big problems. Never mind the fact that he wasn't white, but that his victims were, and of course they are not even mentioned at all, because they were white and they were blonde and they don't count. Blondes are always portrayed as the villains. Blonde women are always portrayed as stupid in the movies, and you know, so they don't count. Keith, over to you, and then I want to broaden this discussion to an even bigger problem.
Right. I was going to say, this whole thing about the gun culture, you know, do you really think that this shooter was a member of the NRA, National Rifle Association, or the GOA, Gun Owners of America? That's supposedly the bastions of gun culture in America, and I can guarantee you that he was a member of neither group. I will just about bet the farm on the fact that he was not. So consequently, you know, let's get off of, you know, it's just an insult to the intelligence of anyone to believe the portrayals that come from the lips of mainstream media analysts. They are probably the most dishonest group of people as a group that you could ever name in modern life.
Well, that was the biggest observation that I came to after reading about this and watching this guy's manifesto, or reading his manifesto rather, and watching some of his YouTube postings, one of which you can find at thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight. Obviously, it was a tragic thing. You don't want to see stuff like that happen ever, but this is the manifestations of multiculturalism, where you have jealousy and discontent. As we say, the fact of the matter remains that the history of race relations can be summed up in one word, and that's conflict. But there is a bigger problem, I think. As tragic as the loss of life in this case was, and Ramsey Paul touches on this and asks the question, is Elliot Rodger, that was the shooter here, who took his own life, by the way, he ended it, he was the last victim, if you can call him that. Elliot Rodger, is he the face of the new millennial American male? He's mixed race, he's effeminate. Obviously, I don't guess he was homosexual, because he claimed to be attracted to white women, and because blonde women wouldn't sleep with him, he had to kill them. But if he wasn't homosexual, he missed a heck of a calling, as you like to say from time to time, Keith. Missed a heck of an opportunity. Anyway, mixed race, effeminate, atheist, liberal divorced parents, narcissistic, cosmopolitan, prone to crying fits. Actually, his personality reminds me a lot about Barack Obama. But Ramsey Paul nailed it. Is he the new American male? And Ramsey Paul, who's been a guest on our show in the past, and we feature his videos from time to time, he compared the 22-year-old Elliot Rodger to the 22-year-old George Washington. When George Washington was 22-year-old, he was fighting in the French and Indian War. You don't even have to go back to historical heroes of our people to draw a comparison. You even go back to, yeah, I was born in 1980, Keith. You go back to my parents' generation, and certainly my grandparents' generation. You were a man at 22 years of age. You had a family in most cases. You were definitely working very hard. You know, all the stuff about cotton picking. My grandparents picked cotton. Back-breaking labor. They picked cotton, okay? They were doing that before they were 22 years old. But they were men and women by that time, and they were well on their ways to being productive members of society. It's not... This is a problem that crosses racial boundaries, especially as far as men are concerned. Men are taught now and programmed by our media, by our schools, by the powers that be, to be weak, to be passive, to be submissive. You know, they're taught not to go out and work. Honest days pay for an honest day's labor. They are taught to play video games and to get online and to hide behind Facebook and dating applications. You're not taught to be a man. You're not taught to be aggressive. I could tell, you know, there's no mystery as to why this guy couldn't get a date. It's because he was weak and feminine, and that's all there is to it. You need to be aggressive and confident and dominant with women, and they will react. They are programmed to react. That's a little bit off the beaten path, but the fact of the matter is men are not men anymore, and the problem is greater than the time we have to answer it, but Keith, do your best.
Okay, the problem is that liberalism, the brave new world of liberalism, has given us feminized men, one, and two, masculinized women. And guess what? That has something to do with falling birth rates, because real women don't find feminized men attractive any more than real men find masculine women attractive. So basically, a lot of men and women who are succumbing to the blandishments of liberalism are going to have Elliot Rodgers' problem. They're going to find that they are not attractive to the opposite sex. It's just that simple. Back to you, James.
Well, but of course, he couldn't be responsible for any of his shortcomings. And that's another thing that I think you see more prevalent now with my generation, or even the generation that has come since mine. There's no responsibility. There's no accountability. They don't have any parental guidance. You know, either both parents are working, or they come from a broken home where divorce has had its impact, or perhaps they were never married to begin with, which is even more of a likelihood day in and day out. But there's no responsibility with men anymore. And I can't speak for women. Well, women too, but I think, you know, it's really the man's job. You know, I think men should be held to a higher standard as far as this goes. But, I mean, he wasn't responsible for his lot in life. When, first of all, too, you know,
he's a poster child for liberalism.
Well, he's a poster child for liberalism. As we mentioned, he's mixed race. He's this, that, and the other. His father was a Hollywood heavyweight. I mean, this kid was a millionaire. So there's never worked a day in his life. No reason not to have what he wanted. But it was always somebody else's fault. No responsibility of his own. And that's, again, a problem that has been manufactured to make our people weaker. And it's making everybody weaker, not just whites, but mixed races as well. I guess really the only people that are taught to be proud of themselves are the minorities. But this guy didn't get the message on that. He was a self-identified Eurasian, I think, is what he referred to himself as, which was fairly accurate. But nevertheless, your thoughts again, Keith, on responsibility, accountability, and the lack thereof with kids these days.
Well, I think liberalism has done a double whammy. It has managed to make a lot of men unattractive to women and a lot of women unattractive to men. And as a result, there are fewer people getting together, fewer people having healthy marriages in which male leadership used to be a given. Watch, again, Tammy and the Bachelor and compare it to the world of Elliot Rodgers. That's the type of world, brave new world, that we've been given, and it is a poisonous world. It is a dysfunctional world. It is a world doomed to fail, doomed to fall, and it's engineered to be that way. I don't believe this is a coincidence, people. I believe this is exactly what the cultural Marxists, which are the real movers and shakers behind modern liberalism, had in mind. And it's working like a charm. It's incredible. Read Herbert Marcuse. Read him about polymorphous perversity and things like this. What they were doing. This was the main popularizer of cultural Marxism, who coined phrases like make love, not war, and if it feels good, do it, and was largely responsible for the sexual revolution, one of the great radical egalitarian movements of the 1960s. This type of destructive behavior has been patterned into young people through the entertainment industry. And Elliot Rodgers, like James said, is the poster child for the success of this imprinting that has been going on thanks to the liberals in Hollywood.
Well, folks, when we come back after the next break and we get into the second hour, we're going to shift our attention to something much more positive and much more uplifting. Right-of-center parties are sweeping into power across Europe and taking positions as members of European Parliament to the European Union. It's not just one party, and it's not just a handful of candidates. It is multiple parties that are speaking with one voice. Europe belongs to us. Let's restrict immigration and embrace our identity. Folks, I don't know if there's been anything that's occurred in the last 10 years since I've been doing this show that has gotten me this excited. We're going to break it down for you when we come back. Stay tuned.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.